call the November 16th special meeting.
Recording in progress.
Sorry about that. Very loud.
Discuss the amendments.
Dave?
I'm sorry, I didn't hear.
Turn your mic up.
What?
So you'd like me to explain?
Yep.
So the initial question is, the request is that we have people within the office who have been raised to management positions. We had a higher level management position which we couldn't fill. And so we're raising this person to a lower management position. In order to put them there, we're reducing the higher level down to her level, which was 103 down to a 90 plus. And so it, we basically are paying for it with, with respect to the budget that we have. But it allows us to provide for the management level that we need in the office. And so that's why we've done this. At the other level, we have three attorneys who are entry level positions. And two of them are at the $70,000+ level, and one is at the $69,000+ level. So we want to just equalize that so all the entry level positions are the same. Is there any question?
Anybody have any questions?
So all of that, I don't know exactly. I think it's so. $1,000 plus in change, but it's not a big deal. The next issue is that we have two long-term support staff, one who has taken the test as a legal secretary and passed it as of August, and the other, who is actually our longest-serving support staff, 23 years, who passed the test back in 2009 as a legal stenographer. I've talked with personnel, and both of them are qualified to be at the legal secretary level. And that allows them to get the increases that are reflected here.
Okay. Let's say Ron.
Thank you. I guess the one question I have on this is, has personnel gone in and done a desk audit based on their work that they perform, if the work they perform substantially conforms with the legal secretary?
We've had a discussion. It clearly does. And the one who was a legal stenographer back in 2009 has been performing entirely as a legal secretary for the last 12 years or so. And the other one has a combination of responsibilities that includes legal work that she does for our office.
Yeah. I guess my question is, would you be open to having personnel go in actually do the desk audit?
Fine.
Because that would make me more comfortable. And one of the issues that I have that has nothing to do with your office is that this county executive has a couple of times reclassified CSEA positions without a desk audit without coming to the legislature. So it's a pet peeve of mine as of late.
Sure. Mr. Rock, I have no problem with that. The truth is that almost every support staff in my office does primarily legal work, so that would be fine.
Understood. Thank you.
Thanks. And the final request relates to our $500,000 grant from the Department of Justice. This is totally funded from that grant. It is the first year's provision for where these monies would go. It is something that, as I say, will not cost the county any money, but it will serve the purpose of helping our intimate partner violence intervention program expand throughout the county.
Any questions?
Thank you.
So the First Amendment with the Department of Environment is to increase the deputy
I am one to always promote within, and the environment is looking to do such as well. The person in the position that is a candidate for this deputy director actually makes more with the new union contracts. So this increase is to, there's severe compression issue in that department. So having this increase is to move that deputy director up to kind of a reasonable rate.
Any questions?
The next one is titled Sheriff Discovery Personnel Upgrade. It really has nothing to do with the Discovery Grant. It's the sheriff presented an increase to an IT specialist. I believe they did do a desk audit with personnel. Instead of a grade 15, it's a grade 17. So that's the amendment that you have in front of you there.
Sorry, what was it, now 15 you said?
It's a 15 going to a 17. But still under the title of IT. It's not a new title. It's just an IT specialist that should be a grade 17 is what personnel has determined. The next one I did not do with the sheriff. I think this was just sent to the legislature kind of on their own. From reading it, it is covered under the COSAP grant for the sheriff. It looks to me like they're creating three full-time positions and a part-time position under this grant. Again, this is what I can tell with this amendment. I didn't, first time I looked at it was last night when I got it.
Okay, can you speak to that? I feel like there might be an error associated with that. This one, because one of the amendments that was submitted had two worksheet tabs on a single Excel spreadsheet. So we just have to confirm if the sheriff has been was intended to be submitted or not.
Yeah, again, I don't know anything of this amendment, so I'm just going on what the amendment's presented to me.
The sheriff plans on being here around 3.
We'll defer it. Okay.
The next one, I believe we did talk already at the kind of Ways and Means Capital Committee. The port security grant they applied for did not come in. So they are removing that project from the capital program, and that's what this amendment does. And the last amendment that I presented, the legislature actually has tonight in a resolution to approve the UXIA contract. The memorandum has been ratified by the union, and I believe Laws and Rules passed it last night as well. Mm-hmm. This amendment is for that contract. It's 1.3 million dollar increase to the budget, and it's all coming from fund balance. The contract is similar to CSEA and UXA, which have been passed as well.
So the first one here was the increase in salary. These people were just hired, and they would have received an increase again January 1st. So this was just to level it off at the rate that they were hired at
Just to clarify, these are management positions, and throughout the budget, all management received 3%, whether to hire date or not. I will say, I bring even CSEA. If someone was a vacant position was hired in December, they still would get the bump come January 1, regardless of when their hire date is. So with these positions, yes, the resolution was established 2021, but their management positions, across the board, management got a 3% raise.
Are we fully hired with the ARC positions now?
They will all be starting in the next 2 weeks.
Okay.
Yes.
Could you just send over to the office, like, the people that we ended up hiring, that we're going to end up hiring?
Yeah. Again, the paperwork has been in, so, you know, it'll be in the system, but I can definitely provide.
I appreciate it.
Yeah, no problem.
All right, the next one is the clerical pool. This is something I've had conversations with the deputies, executive, and Bert and Chris. You know, we have positions that I think could be that we haven't filled, and that we can have a central pool where people can be cross-trained to fill into different departments instead of having one in every department. We can, where there may be some less busy times, there can be a sharing of staff throughout the entire county. And that's sort of the reason for doing this. Great.
So just in terms of this, I think what CMA was getting at is also reflective in just the natural way that the county works. This is definitely proven during the pandemic where I, for one, set up a testing site in the first 2 weeks. I helped run the resource recovery center for the entire duration along with the innovation and budget staff. Tashka, to the right of me, has been running the dashboard and all of the data for the entire duration of the pandemic, and every morning to this day. So at times of need, and not just during the pandemic, certainly during the budget and when we're formulating the annual report, we have to go to finance or we have to go to the other departments to help pick up some of those duties we can't fulfill. So I think the natural movement of the organization does speak to the intent of this. I think that the goals are right. I don't think the DA would recommend giving up vacant administrative positions that I think we all certainly ask for and need in order to do this right away. I think we should look at clerical. I think we should look at accounting. I think we should look at centralized grant management, which is something that has come up. But I think we should have a more in-depth conversation before we move to vacating positions or moving money out.
Yeah. So I mean, I feel a weight of this is in my committee, and so I'm particularly concerned because in many there's specialties in all different departments, but like the importance of somebody who is able to know what the district attorney's office needs and knows what probation needs. I don't feel that those are necessarily the spaces of sharing. I'm all about shared services. I'll say that I fought to get the assigned council admin person in last budget, so I'd be very challenged to, I want to fill it. I don't want to merge it, and it's an important position. And I would guess that that's true for probation and the district, for all of them, that the real question is why they're not filled and what do we need to do to fill them if the salary is too low. But you know, I think that the clerical staff, and I'm not just, you know, brown nosing, is the core of every department, and I would be really happy to look at other ways of sharing services, but I feel very protective of these particular ones.
I'll just say the intent is not have those positions. It's to sort of formalize what Chris had just said, where you're doing this now loosely and informally. There's no formal process, no person overseeing it. There's no process to actually go and request somebody. We would fill the positions, but people would get, let's say, a minimum basic training that they could fill in. Like our issue last year with Board of Elections, where we had to have people have a tremendous amount of comp time because we didn't have extra people that we could just bring in to help. All I'm looking for is to get a formalized process together where they will still have their staff, but at times where they can spare some hours, they would do that under some type of umbrella of the department.
I would argue that the lack of them being filled is means it's people are doing more work than they should right now. I think this idea of having a floating clerical pool might be a great idea. I just feel like I would be hard-pressed to imagine that if somebody does get filled into one of these positions, they would have that time just because it's empty. That it could be true in some departments, but the fact that it's empty to me is not enough proof that they would potentially have time to do other things. I think that there's heavy demands in these departments. So I appreciate the conversation, and I think we should look at it, but I'm just concerned about these particular departments being stripped of these positions.
Again, I'm not looking to strip them. It was pulled out just to the point of having a formal plan. They would be still part of the department that they were originally assigned to, but they were, when they're hired, it would be with the understanding of they could be used in other departments, and they would all receive some form of, and that would have to be a discussion and a needs assessment of what the minimum skills would be to help out in any other county department. There are, you're 100% right. There, a person working in a DA's office, it is not going to easily be filled by somebody potentially working in Board of Elections. It's not going to be easy just to float somebody from there over there to do the exact same job. But to do some form of that job, answering phones, mailing, typing, whatever, there's basic things that somebody can fill in and help temporarily if the department can spare them. That's what I'm saying, is if the department can spare
them. I understand, but I guess what I'm saying is they have to fill that position and have someone in it to know whether they can spare some of their time.
Mm-hmm.
And I see red. Like, I see these are being, I see subtractions. And so I feel like if they have a full office, you know, if I went to the DA and said, you're fully staffed, your people are in, can you spare some time of when needed, but to imagine whether you can spare time when that position isn't filled. I could see figuring it out if the position was filled, you know, taking, but I feel like it would be a very challenging mathematical calculation to figure out how much time you have of somebody who actually isn't there yet doing the work.
You don't. It's impossible. You can't. My point is going, so this really came from something that Bert had said, where this, or maybe it wasn't, maybe it was John, who said there might be a civil service issue related to this. It was either you or John who said
yeah.
this, but there might be a civil service issue. But if we create the position now going into it, knowing that there's another line item on their job description that says maybe flow to other departments, and we work that out with CSCA, then it's not an issue going into it. They work for the district attorney's office. No question asked. And if there's a need and somebody puts it out there and Chris is the go-to person, you say, call Chris, hey, I need somebody at Board of Elections. Can you spare anybody? Can anybody be spared from another department? You would put out the all points bulletin looking for somebody to fill in, and then those who have extra time could then potentially float over there. But right now, the concern is that they can't because it might become a union issue.
I understand. I still feel like the removal of these positions I'm not comfortable with.
Is it possible? I mean, I think we're putting the solution first rather than doing an analysis. With all due respect to CMA, they had quick conversations, and this is the same exact paragraph that they pushed over last year without providing any backup as to the potential achieved savings. So I think it's laudable to look at any of these types of potential efficiencies within a department, but without analyzing what's actually happening, I think we're prescribing the solution before identifying the problem potentially here. And I think engaging in that conversation and understanding the pitfalls before we go into it may lead us into a better place.
For me, this really didn't come out of CNN. This is coming from the issue of Board of Elections that happened last year. That's really what drove this. To me, it was pretty apparent that we had a deficit in that department that we really need to resolve. And this would be potentially a way to resolve it.
So any position that, and anybody can correct me if I'm wrong, if you're going to be putting staff into the Board of Elections for assistance, it has to be bipartisan. So you're going to run into another potential pitfall outside of even civil service.
just one thing that to go with Legislator Walter, probation position is actually a defunded position that we're bringing back, so they need that position, and it's truly not, it doesn't even exist right now in terms of funding. It will be vacant come January 1st. The other one is the DSS one, also is the same rationale where these are restored positions. So they're not vacant yet because they're not funded. Just so you're aware, the departments need these positions.
Just to the Commissioner of Finance on that, were those positions utilized during the early retirement incentive?
Yes. One actually, the administrative assistant in probation was a probation officer. Nancy needs office assistance. That's why she asked for that administrative assistant.
Any other discussion? It costs
money. Did we lose
that? I think they're not on camera, and it's, I think Jay has it set to high when they're not.
Not really. I mean, a little bit, but we paid money for their retirement. Sorry, I'm just grouching.
The next one is energy consultants. Right now, if you feel this room right now, there's clearly something where we're not optimizing. we're not optimizing our HVAC here in this building, and I'm sure it's probably the same way throughout the rest of the county buildings.
This building's HVAC system is awful. And anybody who works here can attest to that.
So there
it's
are
cold in the winter, it's hot in the summer.
Exactly.
Greenhouse.
Yeah, mm-hmm. If only it was. There are plenty of contractors that will do studies essentially for free. I say essentially for free because they get paid out of the savings that they find you after they do their evaluation. Typically, it's done on a two-year basis, and they take half of the savings. So whatever you save in for over 2 years, they're taking 50% of it, and then everything after that is your pure profit because you're making your money back by not having those things. New York State Power Authority has programs for it. Siemens, Trane, they all have power purchase agreements or energy contracts that you can go into. So this really isn't a cost necessarily, but it's something that I want to see us try to work towards in 2020.
So to this point, we have the Department of Environment who engages in a regular assessment of our energy use and needs. I think that we should engage them in the conversation to see what work has already been done and maybe report out to you and to the committee to make sure that we're not having an overlapping effort here. They work very closely with NYSERDA and NYPA on a lot of the projects. Right now we're doing the lighting retrofit over at Development Court. That's part of one of those partnerships. So the activity is ongoing. I think maybe an effective report out would also help give you more information regarding this.
Well, if they're doing this already, then that's even more frightening, the fact that we're sitting here freezing right now.
So, to that point, I know that DPW has an ongoing capital project to upgrade it all and replace HVAC systems throughout the county. So that's been an ongoing project, so that is in the capital program.
And our costs.
Where we find energy efficiency and savings, then we would certainly go after that as well.
Okay, because I guess my point is that like I mentioned, Siemens and Trane are the two largest ones that do this. They would find the savings, and develop the project, and install it, and it doesn't cost you anything out of pocket.
And they do that on a municipal scale?
Yeah.
Okay. I think we should engage the department to make
sure
that.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I agree.
Commissioner Rock.
Thank you. I just wanted to say that Heidi noticed that this window was cracked a little bit. I closed it to save us $10.
Well, it's the way the fuel was going up, it might be worth $10.
That's what I'm saying.
Inflationary adjustment. So I know I spoke about this when we originally were given an overview of the budget. More so, this is just taking into account of prices are going up. Yes.
Just to make everyone aware, in terms of, I know you listed a bunch of professional services, supplies, materials within our budget. It's our budget process. We did increase fuel, electric and gas is increased. A lot of the professional services are under contract. I can speak for the accounting and auditing. We have contracts in place for next year. That is what we budget. And I think increasing them even more is not necessary because that is how we budget. And, we accounted for that all in the budget process.
Can you pull those out because I don't want to duplicate it. You're 100% right. If we do have a contract and it's not
Just contract, but I look at even auto fuel. I'm up, I just calculated it here because I ran a report quick. I'm up almost 12% on auto fuel. Electric and gas, I'm over 5%. I did this in the budget process. We took into account the costs that we are paying for now.
But when I asked that question, you guys said no. So inflation
it wasn't asked to me.
That's fine. So when we were talking about it, I was thinking more supply increases in terms of capital, which we are now starting to hit, so I own that one. Bert is right. We definitely looked at department by department, especially the ones that use a significant amount of gas, electric, and we did put increases in there because at the time prices weren't as high as they are today, but they were certainly on the rise during the summer when we were making those assessments.
And I will say, you know, one of the accounts you have too is legal services, which in my department I'm responsible for assigned counsel. It's legal services. That rate's $75 an hour by the state. There's no inflation to that rate. So just for the committee's awareness, that's all.
I just want to make sure it's okay if I can be excused. I have some urgent matters to deal with.
Yes. You have to go warm up, don't you? That's what it is.
Exactly. Thanks a lot.
Thank you. All right, the next one is the same as sort of the energy one, is having an evaluation done of our IT needs and current systems, both from personnel to hardware and software.
I need to get us out there.
I was just a note. I just said they need to get out of South Man. It's collapsing.
South Man is collapsing, right?
So, in terms of this, we would have to understand what the full scope is to understand. It's right now. It's a $5 amendment before we can provide kind of a budgetary analysis on impact. We are engaging in some of this work internally between innovation and some of the employees and information services to do the systems inventory. To create more of a strategic plan, so we're heading in that direction. I'm not saying that outside assistance isn't helpful, but I did notice that this is not within our department, so we're not sure if this is an audit of the services that we would be audited on and not a party to. Is that the intention?
It's partially an audit, but it's an audit with then recommendations that will prove essentially the same as the energy contract. They don't get paid. They get paid 50%. That's typically. I'm sure there's plenty of different billing models that they have out there. But the ones I have experience with, they take 50% of a 2-year savings after they've identified actual savings, not projected or anything. They take the real savings that they've saved you based on the recommendation. And if you don't take their recommendations, they don't get paid. It's only on what you actually truly, at the end of the day, save. The one company I know of, because we did it at the town of Warsing, was Communication Research Consultants. They came in and did an entire assessment of the telephone and computer system there, and they got paid 50% of our savings over 2 years. And it didn't cost the town anything. In fact, we saved money, so it worked out very well. No, go ahead.
So just two follow-ons. We haven't done those types of contracts in the county, so I certainly want to reach out to the director of purchasing, Ed Jordan, to see if he's had any experience in that realm. I think, obviously, that sounds like a decent proposition. The second part is, but this is in legislative programs, and this wouldn't be within the executive and operations. Is that the intent?
Correct. It would be outside.
So the report would go to the legislature, and it wouldn't be for ours to implement within the department?
No, it would be for you to.
But they'd be reporting to the legislature, correct?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay. Sales tax. So well, I mean, the overview of this part, and I'll get to the exact amounts in a second, is that, you know, and I know I've had long conversations with both Bert and Chris about this. I just have a hard time believing that the sales tax number projected is going to hit the actual number.
Can you move your microphone? It's very difficult to hear.
Sorry. I've got to remember to talk into that. the sales tax number that's projected, I just, you know, I have a hard time believing that we're really going to hit that number. And so that's my reason why I changed it.
Just a couple of things. I hate to give myself a pat on the back, but my track record kind of speaks for itself. I've been off since sales tax, granted, it's been higher than budget quite a bit, but twice since 2015. One was because of a pandemic. If I knew, I probably would have reduced it. And the other one, I was off $6,000. Right now, to date, we have $119.4 million in sales tax. That's without any fourth quarter. And I'm looking at 2019 in terms of my comparison in the budget. In 2019, in the fourth quarter, we had $28.5 million. With no growth, that brings the 21 total to almost $148 million. With no growth. Right now, to date, we're 21% above 2019's number. I don't expect another 21% in the fourth quarter, but I read today, September was the highest growth in terms of retail spending since March. We could hit $150 million in sales tax. I can get that number rather easy with a 10% growth. Gives me $150 million this year. So my budget for $143 in 2022, it's lower than what we're going to receive this year. Things should slow down. I don't disagree with you, but I don't think they're going to slow down or we're going to fall off a cliff in terms of our numbers. If we hit $150 million, $143 million in the 20 is a 5% decrease from that 150 number. It's 3.5% from the 148 with no growth in the fourth quarter. I'm pretty confident of the 143. God forbid something does happen, which is out of our control. You know, anything can happen. I've been here for the pandemic. I've been here when the stock market crashed. I don't see it yet. I know prices are up. We still have people from all over with tourism. Our occupancy tax is through the roof. So the 143, I am pretty confident we will reach next year.
Unsettled the labor contracts. That's just the, you spoke about the one earlier. We just settled.
Thanks. I have concern about putting, you know, a number in the budget on unsettled labor contracts. I feel like we should leave that money in fund balance. When you put dollar amounts on it, it could be considered, you know, I think by our labor attorneys and others as negotiating in not so good faith. It also gives the labor unions a number to reach for if it's higher than the number that they were coming at. I respect where you're coming from, and we all know that these are outstanding issues. I've just never been in favor of monetizing the budget.
And I will say the one union that is, you know, there's two, there's PBA and SOU right now. PBA could also go to binding arbitration, which could cost us even more. And I think, again, as Legislator Ronk said, having it in the budget would be negotiating in bad faith, and it would show our hand for those contracts. Thank you.
Legislator Ronk.
Yeah, yes, thank you. I said from the beginning I was going to be coming back to this. I just don't see this as an important position. Again, a position that's vital to the operation of county government. I would prefer the first one, which eliminates the position altogether. I have two of them in. The second one would move it back to the previously budgeted amount prior to the prior to the last raise that the position received.
So we certainly continue to maintain that it's an essential part of our duty to communicate to the public. This was definitely proven during the pandemic and continues to this day in that important area. We also think that timely dissemination of critical information to the public don't support lowering the salary of this position, and nor do we support laying off the person currently in this position. So that goes for both of the amendments proposed.
I'll start with the fact that it would be a layoff is on the county executive. I told him of my plan to bring this up again come budget time. I told him that any move to hire the person for that position would not weigh on my decision to put this resolution in, to put this amendment in. I believe that it was 2 days after the legislative meeting where we did not eliminate it in the previous budget year that he hired the exact person who he said that he was, well, it's not necessarily going to be her, but it might be, you know, we're going to do a big search. And then 2 days later, you know, the person who we all knew, because we're not stupid, was hired. So, I respect the argument that, you know, dissemination of information is important, and I know that COVID is used as, a special reason to justify everything these days. And dissemination of information for COVID-related items is used to, you know, justify this position. But I'll tell you that every single press event that the county executive holds, there are two communications people at, one who's holding a camera and one who's holding a video camera taping him. I believe very strongly, and I have from the beginning, I haven't said this publicly, but I'll say it publicly now, I believe that this position is more about self-promotion than it is about promotion of the county or county services. I'm getting there. Sorry. Lost in my own thoughts. Got it. This is another one. I respectfully, the county government has I think done a pretty good job for many, 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 many years without a constituent services navigator. This is allegedly, from what I've been told, modeled after the Recovery Service Center, which was created post-COVID, which the person who's now the communications specialist was reclassified a couple of times from, you know, fiscal analyst to, you know, anyway, it ended up being, you know, well, you know, she's currently the head of the Recovery Service Center and as a legislator and the minority leader and a member of Ways and Means and whatnot, what's the Recovery Service Center? Because it's certainly something that's never passed by the legislature or, you know, brought before us or discussed with us. What the COVID hotline became. So all these things are becoming something else. And again, I respect where it's coming from. I don't agree with it. I think it's an unnecessary level of government. And I think it's, you know, it's more self-promotion. It's another person to, you know, again, be part of self-promotion.
So in terms of the difference between the COVID-19 hotline and Recovery Service Center, it is one and the same. It was a name change that happened when we were entering into a phase of the pandemic where there was a lull in the numbers and we were starting to transition in the information and the services we were providing. The model has stayed the same. Since the inception, we've received over 93,000 incoming calls. We've generated over 29,000 service requests. This touches everything from vaccination testing, housing support, navigating social services or health services. So it's jumped into just about every critical area of government. This is one of the key takeaways of the pandemic for us in terms of management. When you talk about shared clerical pools or finding a way to provide better and more efficient services, this is certainly one of those areas. When somebody calls the county currently, on the regular number, you go through a menu of 12, 13, 14 different departments, but you have no idea about the services they provide. This is an intelligent and efficient way to navigate people through the different services, to deal with their issues with the human on the other line, and to help them connect with what they need. We think that this service would do more than just be self-promotion. We reject that notion. We think that the ability to categorize, use data to surface problems before they become bigger problems, which is exactly what we did during COVID. We think that carrying that into our everyday work is something that is going to provide a higher benefit to our residents.
Legislative Rock and then Legislative Archer.
Thanks. I'd be happy to transfer the communication specialist over to this, and then they could actually be communicating with the public. But that's a whole another ball of wax. I respectfully would ask if there's any way to quantify how many people would not have been served by the typical answering process in county departments, because every county department has administrative assistants. We heard, the DA was, we've given him a couple extra ones over the last, I think it was the sole no-go, but, there's administrative assistants, confidential secretaries in every department across the county. So, how is this not a duplication of those services? And B, is there a way to quantify how many people from these 60,000 calls that or requests for service that were made would not have been made absent the Recovery Service Center, which, by the way, I'd go back to, the reason that those of us in the legislature didn't really know much about it is because the county executive was kind enough to squirrel it away on his side of the building and not really tell us about it.
Mr. Archer.
Thank you. I had reached out to Mark last week asking for some data. If in fact this is a new function, yes, it was COVID related, but you just talked about 93,000 COVID calls with combination of service requests. We'd love to see the data you use to rationalize why this move to this concept would be beneficial and what your intent with this group is. It is a new concept. Because it's not just dealing with the pandemic, but you're looking to implement it as part of your workflow. And along with that, you're also talking about improving your website. And from my perspective, the website is key. You look at almost any service provider, whether it's retail, government, what have you, healthcare, everybody's moving to automated systems because it's much more efficient and cost-effective, and we have the ability to track. I know you're putting in the QSend program, and I've got to believe that there are ways of using that to track. Why would we be adding staff versus looking at leveraging technology, improving websites? So if you all came up with a rationale as to why this was the first step, we'd appreciate that and to be able to understand it before we start funding it.
Mr. Walker?
Can you use
your microphone, please?
What?
Microphone.
Oh, of course. I have a second question, but the first question is it your thought that, because maybe I'm getting confused, are you seeing this as a continuation of the COVID need also? Is that all coming into this, or is this a separate thing from your COVID outline? That's my first question.
So I've kind of got two questions now floating, if you don't mind if I
address
both. So to your point, we're taking the model, but really this is not a new model of service delivery for counties or municipal governments. This is really an extension of approaches to 311 or 211 systems. That 211 focuses more on connecting to services. 311s are typically about reporting issues. So QSend has the ability to create a knowledge base, which we've been doing over the past almost 2 years now. And then it also has the ability to geolocate, categorize, and do all of these different functions that would help us identify different problems within the community. Those are inherent to any 211 or 311 system. We're looking at it from an emerge standpoint. To the point of the connection to the website, I fully agree. So there is a lot of tech that is involved with this. There is a tech stack here. The website is where people will most likely make their first entry in touch with county government if they haven't already called. So moving to a more services-based website where people are not searching by department, but are searching by what their need is. You can do that via Zendesk or other applications. QSend also has the ability to be part of the kind of infrastructure of the website, so you can actually enter tickets directly in there. You have to have those tickets. You have to have a workflow that allows those tickets to be responded to, routed properly. So there is still, it's not an automatic flow of information. It doesn't work that way. It is much more efficient. It is much more in terms of categorizing and recognizing need of the community. It is much more helpful in that realm. So there is a tech stack. I will get you the statistics. They were sent to me this morning, so I know those were owed to you. I will get those over to you. In terms of the continuity of COVID, it's the bulk of the work now, and right now we've pulled from other departments to help staff this, and that's what we've been doing for this entire time. This goes to that shared resources. It's a time of need, and we allocated resources. So it's, I don't believe that we're going to continue at doing 45,000 or 50,000 calls a year to that extent. But we have significantly more staff at times working on the COVID-19 hotline than what's been requested in the budget.
Give a second.
Thanks. I would say that if the issue is we're still in a pandemic and we still need the capacity to provide services to individuals, then that should be separate and separated out of this. I mean, we have ARP money that could perfectly go towards something like that. So I'm not going to think of it in terms of COVID. I'm going to think of it as its own thing on its own. I'd say, you know, the concept of geolocating concerns sounds very interesting and exciting. I think the reality of it is it's a bit unrealistic because, again, there's no way people will not continue to reach out directly to departments that they, you know, people who are connected with DSS are going to go directly to DSS for the most part. So we would only have that geocoding for those people who use the system, and I don't think we'd get the bang for the buck that you think we would. I'd also say, working for a very complex medical organization myself, when you add this extra layer, it actually doesn't make it more efficient. We added a whole system to make appointments as this external process, and it made it so much worse than just calling a health center directly. And so I have a lot of trouble seeing how this, on top of other ideas like the website, how this improves it. I think the 211, 311 with it divided up and having, you know, instead of one number for the county where you have a huge list with 211, 311, the high need services, you can have buttons to press to get you right to DSS, to get you right to the public defender's office or whatever that is. I think that's perfectly reasonable. This concept of having this, including two administrators, it feels like it doesn't feel like it will be more efficient and effective in the general running of the county. I can't see it.
Mr. Haynes, then Walt, then Archer, then Chris.
If you could confirm for me, I know recently this in the past year, actually since June, OTDOT rolled out their ERAP and LRAP, and when they rolled out that program, each county was tasked with managing their own calls regarding it and its facilitators regarding the program. Isn't it the fact that your recovery service center actually handled local host calls? I do believe that was the contact phone number for Ulster.
Yes. So, and through those calls, we were able to surface problems and push those up to ERAP, which helped them identify issues in terms of getting funding out the door.
So the departments had rental assistance programs, and then yes, came the landlord rental assistance programs. And I do know that through the work I do for the state, that our office is inundated with those calls, and then they are pushed out to the local facilitators. So I do believe you were able to reinvent or utilize Resource Recovery Center number and whatnot for assisting with that as a local facilitator.
Let's say Archer.
Yeah, thank you. He answered my question. I was questioning where the data was, and so he did answer. So I look forward to getting that, Chris. Thank you.
I just have one more point on the staff that we requested. So what we've set up is a program manager, a person that would be in the middle that crosses between your kind of two frontline call takers. So that person that's in the middle, I know it could seem redundant, but what they're doing is primarily focusing on dealing with case escalations, which will happen. You do get calls of a more serious nature, and we've experienced that throughout the past 2 years, that do get escalated and have to go a different route. And we do have processes in place to account for that. That person is also responsible for creating the knowledge base. So key to any of these systems and finding those efficiencies or making sure that our call takers have the best available information to get people from, we want to get away from just going to departments because they don't always know, and this has been our experience even prior to COVID, that people don't know where to go for the services they need all the time. You need a better front door so they're better able to access those services, and we think that this certainly provides that better front door.
Chairman?
Yes.
Thank you. Chris, to that point, what's the average intake on calls for each rep each day?
So that has fluctuated. When we first started doing vaccinations in January, and I was also working on the center at the time, we got overwhelmed to the point where it was in excess of 500-600 calls in a single day, and it overwhelmed the system. I think what you've seen is it ebbs and flows with what's happening in the community. When we took on the EREP responsibility, started to go up, and you could categorize and see how the nature of the calls changed. Right now, you're rolling out more vaccination programs. You're seeing the nature of the calls change, and you'll see an uptick on that as we open up pods. So one thing, and this is, I think, another important data point, we do have a county number that connects you to a phone tree. That phone system receives 450 calls that takes you to that randomized, non-answered phone tree where you have to go through and wait for the number to type in and get to that department. It doesn't provide any other information. So right now that's averaging 450 calls.
What do you see the role of the manager of that department? You talked about that mid-level person being your knowledge expert research person. What's the role of the manager?
The person has to have some experience with dealing with the tech stack because it's going to be closely intertwined. It is in information services, so they have to be the subject matter expert in QSEND and how that works. Designing the internal processes, most likely working with innovation and other departments. I would say a lot of our external service departments are going to be critical in that area. So that person's going to be leading that effort. There is also building the program out for the long term. It has to be managed.
Are you saying that it's a one and done, that they'll be able to answer the calls and they're not going to be referring the people to other departments? Navigating them to where their question will be answered.
No, that's the entire program. So they are the front door. They're taking the call. They're asking the questions and finding the best way, based on our knowledge base, to route them to the appropriate department for the service they need. The other part of this is when you create a ticket or you create a case, you're able to look at this person who might need assistance from aging, DSS, veterans. They might need it from health. They might need it from a myriad of different programs the county offers. We'll now have a better ability to track these people as they access our systems and our services throughout the county.
Let's see your wrong thing, Walter.
Thank you. The more I listen to the explanation and the justification of this, the more I really didn't know if I was wild about your clerical pool, but I mean, if we're gonna spend hundreds of thousands of dollars on this new front door to the county, I think we should name it the front door department. But if we're gonna spend hundreds of thousands of dollars in this new front door where we're gonna have people, sent to services, I see a lot less of a need for clerical staff in the individual departments. We could actually save money with this the way that Mr. Kelly's talking. So, I don't know. I may have been turned around on your amendment a little bit.
Mr. Walter.
Thanks. appreciate that, that you could provide data on the calls that are not vaccine related, not COVID related. Because once again, if we need to keep going on providing customer, you know, constituent services COVID related, then with ARP money for a couple of years, you know, because we recognize it's one and done, it's not continuous over time. So I would rather see the numbers of the people who are calling not for those reasons to really understand the need for this. Otherwise, I'd rather see, again, you know, identifying the continuation of these services and pay for it within ARP so that it knows that when it's done, it's done. And I also, you know, in terms of duplication of efforts, in terms of, like, the care navigation and everything, I would rather make sure we have the appropriate people in departments like DSS, because that's who really our people are going to when they say, I have food insecurity, I have this problem, I have that problem. Those are there's the multiple marginality, and it's typical that goes there. I'd rather strengthen the departments that are there and created to provide the response to these services than to add this extra layer. But again, I would prefer to see the data of need minus anything related to COVID, emergency housing, rental, limb, like anything that's in the next 2 years isn't necessarily what we're going to be asking this department to do.
Emergency housing is a fundamental service that we provide in DSS, so those things will be ongoing.
Yeah, and I think they should continue to call DSS to get that assistance. So, but again, if you could just separate those numbers out.
Thanks. I also think that our county employees are dedicated and intelligent enough that if you call the health department and you really need help at DSS, they'd be able to direct you to DSS. And phone lines are magnificent these days where there's call forwarding and whatnot. I just, again, you know, it seems like hundreds of thousands of dollars, and again, I see much more, you know, self-promotion. Look at what we're doing at the county. You know, a big function of this is going to be to direct people to state and federal authorities, I believe, because I'm willing to bet you that a lot of those 100,000 calls or whatever they wave at us, is people who are dealing with county, with non-county issues that we then pass along to our fine state and federal representatives. So, again, respectfully, I think that the services are already in place to provide these services at the county already without spending hundreds of thousands of dollars. And I agree with Legislator Walter that if it's COVID-related, then, you know, that does open up ARP money, and we could continue operating, you know, and it would be nice because then the legislature would have an opportunity to weigh in on it in the first place, but, you know, there's money available. Why would we spend tax dollars on it?
Anything further on this one? All right. If not, then we could just pause.
Yeah, Sheriff. Sorry.
Let's go to pause here and go to the Sheriff.
That's what I was saying.
You can go first.
This had to do with the COSAT grant. The Sheriff and I just talked, and we believe this is an incorrect amendment, but I'll let the Sheriff discuss that.
We have not added anyone to the COSAT grant. The only thing I can see is that we have not hired one peer advocate.
Okay, I guess I'm on that. So I'll repeat that again. In regards to the COSAP grant, I have not submitted an amendment. I believe it's because the reason probably is brought up here is because we have not hired one peer advocate, but everything that was in the budget last year, and it's covered by the grant. And you can correct me.
Yeah, no, it's included in the 2022 budget. That's why, again, I wasn't familiar with this amendment. It doesn't sound like this has to do with the COSAP grant.
I guess my question is, if the Sheriff didn't put in and Bert didn't put in, who put it in?
Good question.
Amber?
I did not put it in, but it's that two tabs. I think it was submitted on accident.
Okay.
Oh. Two tabs on a single worksheet. Maybe they rolled forward.
Yeah,
but it was
last
year.
It could have been last year.
Because we did do the
reminded me of last year's grant, right?
Yes.
Okay.
We did pass one last year.
I think the Sheriff's in agreement with me. Let's pull this amendment.
Fair enough. Perfect.
Okay.
Thank you. I did it last year.
Thanks, folks. Mr. Ron, back to you.
Excellent. So the next one is the Director of Budget Innovation. I guess my first question on this is, you know, right now I believe that the Commissioner of Finance is also the Budget Director. Would this remove the Budget Director title from the Commissioner of Finance and move it to the Director of Budget Innovation, or is that just a new name for the other position?
You want to answer that one?
I'm not replacing the Director of Budget. So this is taking the old name,
yep,
the Director of Innovation, and since the departments combined, we brought back that position and renamed it to reflect the combined department.
Okay. What sort of things will the Director of Innovation be innovating?
I will say, in terms of, you saw this year we changed the budget process in terms of the transparency. We're going to make it more transparent as we go. We're going to continue providing more data to the legislature, acquiring more data from the departments. This is not just innovation, this is budget. It's going to enhance our budget practices too.
Is this in addition to the Deputy Finance Director position that you currently hold, or what's it?
Deputy Budget Director. As Chris pointed out, this is a position we brought back. It was the Director of Innovation. So, again, it's the Director.
I understand. My question is, this is in addition to, so...
Correct.
So Mr. Kelly would be taking this position, and then Pat would conceivably be hiring for the Deputy Budget Director position.
The position would be vacant if it was approved.
Fair enough.
There you go.
But that doesn't necessarily mean vacant forever, obviously, since we're talking about vacant positions that may not be vacant.
It won't be vacant forever. That's true, because I need all the hands on deck in terms of budget.
Fair enough. Yeah. Thank you.
Can you talk about how this position interacts with the three ARPA positions?
I mean, in terms of mind development? Or this
sort of how, right, what's unique and different, since we have three administrative positions we're adding for that, and it seems like most of the innovation we're going to be doing in the next 2 years is tied to that.
No, so innovation is built on internal consulting, performance measurement, performance management. It's trying to create a system where we're using data to better inform policy-making decisions, budgetary decisions. So in the last year, aside from a lot of our work, honestly, when COVID hit, innovation got tasked with working and creating the RSC or doing the testing sites. But in that period, we were also looking at deploying something called objectives and key results. So this is a performance measurement system where you have an objective, and you have key results that speak to measuring whether you're achieving that goal. A lot of our goals are aspirational or based on change efforts that we're doing within the departments. But the crux of it is changing the conversation about how we work. We're looking at, in terms of not just a line item or a 2% increase, because last year we were flat, we should go up 2% this year. We want to get the conversation shifted towards discussing the performance of our program. So when we're allocating those dollars, we know that they're going after things that are successful. So in an organization, these things are on a long continuum. You don't do these overnight. This is in a county that has traditionally relied on performance measurements in terms of doing that type of decision making. That's the system that we're trying to move towards. The other parts of it is looking at internal processes for efficiency. We're looking at the contracting process, which is one of our most essential processes that dictate a lot of how fast can we get out the door, how fast can we get something done, are we efficient in moving our contracts through our internal processes. So that internal process assessment is another big part of that work.
Can I just follow
up? I was going to answer your question about the ARP. When we get those positions, the ultimate goal is to hand off, to have them in terms of the role to procure ARP, to work with the legislature with ARP. Yes, me as the Commissioner of Finance and Chris has put a lot of time in. We are going to oversee it to make sure we get those projects off the ground and finished. But the three people that are going to be hired, they're going to do all the work when it comes to the ARP positions and ARP work.
Good, let's go on.
Thank you. Thanks. Just first off, please tell me that that's not how we make decisions on increases now, right? That was a concern to me that was even said. So you can assure me as you're sitting here that that's not how decisions are made currently.
So what I'm reflecting on is more, sorry, I got academic. So
it's all good.
In terms of moving from, you know, a traditional sense, and this is what happens at the state, is you look at a budget in terms of line items, and you look at cost increases from year to year, and that's typically what you analyze. We think that gathering data on some of our core departments or key processes, or are we achieving, again, like a lot of these stated policy goals, would better help inform those decisions. So implementing a system, whether it's OKRs or using a more widespread KPI or health metrics as a basis, will better help inform those decisions in the long run.
I have one more thing.
Sorry.
Okay. I just, you know, as I'm listening to the description and the justification, I start to feel like the position would belong better either in the comptroller's office or in the legislature, as an external look rather than an internal look. Personally, because you know the innovation team talked about the RSC, which again I go back to the legislature knew little if anything about because it was done, you know, by executive order and executive fiat and not through the legislative process, which, you know, if anybody had any qualms about it, never broke down. We were one of the only legislatures that met entirely through the pandemic. Lots of other legislatures shut down for a while, but because of our fantastic staff, we were able to keep meeting remotely and do the people's business. All the while, you know, we have these things come up where positions are reclassified multiple times in CSEA, which I'm still convinced is not legal to do without coming to the legislature or desk audit. It's good that person's now management confidential, so it's okay. But you create these positions that when I'm having conversations with the county executive and senior staff, the administration, you know, they use acronyms. I've got no idea what they are because they didn't come to the legislature. That gives me pause in, you know, creating new positions to then do just more of that, which, you know, I'm not convinced is going to come to the legislature through the proper channels.
Thanks. I would have to say, so what I believe you said was that this would help improve policies. I think you didn't use the words, but what I would hope is if there was this very high-level position, and this makes me think about the two amendments that Legislator Gavaris put through, essentially we should save money if this position exists. And so I would want to see, how are we going to save money if this position exists? What's that metric? What is the goal of how much money we would save if we actually invested in this amount? In terms of improving policy, I mean, I was thinking initially before Legislator Ron spoke, I would also want to know, like, what is the data that you're proposing we will get on a regular basis to improve policy? But what it has me thinking is more specifically, what data will we have to improve our policy that we couldn't get from the comptroller's office already? And so I feel like I need a lot more support to understand really what this data is that we couldn't get otherwise, what that commitment to providing that data will be, and exactly how you propose that by investing $114,000 a year, we're saving, you know, $228,000 a year or something like that. So, because what other point would there be to have this director of innovation if not to move us forward in some direction? Yeah, saving money or doing good work, good policy work. So you could just provide that information as a point.
You have one question?
I got nothing else. I'm good.
All right, well, I want to speak on that for a second. So it's interesting that you used the word, Chris, efficiency. To me, this position, as I imagine it, would really be the director of innovation and efficiency. And then hearing actually Legislator Rock, which just makes make sense to me. Maybe it doesn't necessarily live in finance where it's currently presented. I can see arguments for the controller's office, I can see arguments for the legislature, but I think a position like this, the problem is when you're trying to merge the budget responsibilities into an innovation and efficiency role, they're competing functions in a sense. Your budget role, you're looking at a lot of times current situations. And it takes away from the focus. If the focus is more future and finding, you know, ways to save money here and there, that's the sole focus of the position. You're not necessarily worried about what's going on currently. That's somebody else to worry about. You're finding ways to fix a problem or prevent a problem from occurring. I'm speaking conceptually here. Just keep that in mind.
So just at that point, program performance budgeting is exactly what we're describing here. It's the full intertwining of a role of measuring the performance of the programs and the processes and tying that to the budget and the financial decisions you make. This is one of the most widespread used budgeting methods. It's been used at the federal, state, municipal, less so at the municipal level, but it's certainly a widespread budgetary method. So I guess I would say it is fully intertwined in a lot of other places. Throughout the country, these things exist. This is not an entirely new concept.
I'm not disagreeing. I agree 100% with what you just said. I guess I'm maybe misunderstanding then your direct involvement as this position in the budget process. Maybe I have a misconception about how that role would play out. If you're saying it's the way you just said it just now, then I 100%, you're right. That is the way you should be doing it, is recommending things based on historical data, looking forward, and presenting alternative projects, solutions, concepts that would be then incorporated into the budget. If that's what we're talking about, then I'm on the same page.
That is what we're talking about.
Mr. Unclinch, your finance?
Sorry. No.
Okay. Mr. Finance.
Sorry. I received a voicemail. I was just checking with a constituent. This is where in a sitcom the camera would be focusing on Bert and his face would get all red and
just shaking his head.
Some really nice music would play. But you know, I don't think that there's a harder working person in the county workforce than that man right there. I think that he has saved this county millions and millions of dollars by his good work, and I think that he has been passed over for many, many years for, you know, salary increases when many other people have received them. And I, you know, I always resisted because I didn't want to embarrass him, but this year I couldn't resist anymore because I think that he's doing great work, and I think that we should do everything we can to keep him here doing that great work. And I think that the salary, if you look at the backup, is still lower than our neighboring counties. One of County Executive Ryan's favorite things to point out to me is what's happening in, you know, Dutchess and Orange County when it comes to communication staff. That's one of the biggest justifications for the communication specialist has been because Dutchess County has these and Orange County has these, while this salary is still lower than the Commissioner of Finance in Dutchess and Orange counties. And I would hate to lose Mr. Gomek to another county or another place because his skills are so, you know, tremendously valuable here. So that's where I come from on this. I'm big on credit where credit's due, and I think that he's a big part of our success in Orange County.
Chris?
I could say that personally and both from the team perspective, we certainly appreciate all the work that he does. I certainly appreciate it. I know Toshko appreciates it as somebody that's still a great deal of knowledge on us in the years that we've worked for him. I mean, other than that, I don't think we're going to have an official comment on the amendment, but we certainly appreciate the sentiment.
Oh, I thought you were queuing up to a butt. It looked like you were almost queuing up to a...
Oh, it's my turn now. Thank you.
I meant to help you.
Let's see.
I
would just like, for the most part, to echo everything that Ken has stated regarding Earth Service back to Ulster County, with the exception that I always take, I don't like comparing to other counties ever. Ulster is unique, it always has been, always will be, but we have been fortunate enough to have Earth, and not only in past years, but in recent year as well, with everything that we've gone through. I do know he's put in a tremendous amount of time, and his knowledge and expertise has been greatly appreciated.
All right, enough of this. Next.
All right, now mental health personnel.
Thanks. You know, I stated to the county executive just prior to him putting the budget out and then after he put the budget out that I'm open to being convinced how pouring hundreds of thousands of dollars into administration in mental health services is going to fix the clinical problem. I've not received a answer that's satisfactory to me about how administrative staff is going to solve a clinical problem. I actually am not necessarily against hiring an analyst, you know, a evaluative analyst, as this does, but, you know, again, I don't know that, you know, if we're not going to bring the services in-house, which we're not, you know, I don't understand how creating a department and creating a commissioner is going to solve a clinical problem. To me, it's just more big government, and if, you know, again, I'm not saying there's not a problem, and I'm not even proposing that we take this money out of the budget. I'm just saying that if we're going to try to solve a clinical problem, we should hire clinicians to solve the problem.
Chris?
So, you know, we certainly believe that we're at a crossroads with regards to mental health services in the county. I think that most of us in this room would agree to that. We do have the Behavioral Task Force report, which does lay the groundwork for a lot of the gaps and services that we think we need to address. And in speaking with Legislator Ronk earlier today, I think that it would be helpful if we put together some of our team that are more experts in the field to have that discussion would be more helpful. I can only speak to the budgetary part of this. I won't pretend to be an expert in the field, but I think it'd be appropriate for us to make them available.
Chair Wilder.
Thanks. Yeah, I do feel like I have a lot of experience in this field. I also spent a lot of time talking to Tara and understanding this separation from her perspective as opposed to from just an administrative perspective. I am always 100% in support of building at the bottom and not at the top. No question. Having client services, having case navigators is absolutely important. I did specifically ask if she felt she had enough right now. She said, could I always use more? Absolutely, but am I handling what I need to? Yes. So I'm not against the idea of building up the workforce, but I would disagree slightly that there isn't, in this case, that need of strong administrative oversight because of a couple things. One is really for us to separate this and do implement what the Behavioral Task Force has put a lot of energy into, really implement this well and right, is going to need strong administrative oversight in my perspective. But also, even if the mental health department had already existed as its own entity for all these years, I think that clinical services will be improved with stronger administrative oversight, because I think there's the aspect of really harnessing the clinical services that we have across this massive county, making sure individual providers are understanding how to work with payers, which is a very complicated process of being able to take insurance or managing Medicare or Medicaid. So the structure of the mental health system and being able to make sure that not provide clinical services, but make sure that the clinical services that we have in our county match the clinical need that we have in our county does, in my perspective, in this case, and I would not say this for most other departments, in this case does require a strong administrative oversight. And so I'm uncomfortable at this stage to get rid of this position because I do feel like we need to see success in this new envisioned mental health department. And I'm very confident when I listen to Tara speak that their vision is very strong. It's very clear. It's besides being described in the hard work that the Behavioral Health Task Force worked on, and anyone can read that. Even from Tara's perspective, it's a very clear, focused perspective of how we're going to improve services that I'm personally extremely excited about.
Thanks. I want to make it clear, I'm not getting rid of a position. This position already exists. This is just a Deputy Commissioner of Health for Mental Health that's being changed to a Commissioner of Mental Health. And, so this wouldn't eliminate the Deputy Commissioner of Mental Health. I want to make that clear. And I don't disagree that it's important to have that. I don't understand, and maybe this is an internal management problem that the county executive has with his commissioner of health, but if the deputy commissioner of health for mental health is not being empowered to do what she has to do to be able to, to be able to handle what's going on over there, I'm not saying that we don't need to hire an analyst to help out and to help with workflow and to help with, managing Medicare and Medicaid and payers and are we billing for the proper service. I'm not saying that. What I'm saying is that I don't understand how creating this department again and creating a commissioner to the tune of what, $27,000, is that right?
No.
But I'm saying that the increase over what the deputy commissioner makes currently.
But it's an additional position.
Yeah.
It's not.
I understand, right. But.
Yeah, so I was going to say, if assuming, let's say that the deputy commissioner is made the commissioner, which is not necessarily true.
Okay.
But if they say they are, then they're going to hire a deputy commissioner.
That's the same thing that they said about the communication specialist the week that she became the communication specialist.
No, my point.
I've lost every shred of confidence that the county executive actually is telling us the correct thing.
My point being is I understand it, and I'm comfortable with it being that the mental health will have a commissioner and a deputy commissioner. That's my only point.
How much do you want to bet today, right now, that the deputy commissioner of health for mental health is not the commissioner of mental health when it's passed?
And I don't mind if that's true. I'm just saying the it is removing a position because in the current budget, mental health would have a commissioner and a deputy commissioner. That's the only point I'm making,
sure,
is that it is a removal.
Anything else?
I'm willing to take all comers on that bet, by the way. Anybody who wants to put up, $10.
It's like a magician. It's like a ventriloquist who was lip syncing. Four. And then every time I lose more respect because it's over and over again.
Okay, so just the new show is it's going to be heard at 4 p.m.
We're fast, man.
Yeah, so listen, it was originally scheduled for 15 minutes. I remember from last year that we had a lot of downtime, so I asked Amber to shorten this up. Still not short enough, apparently. But if we just take maybe 10 minutes.
Okay. I mean, is there other. Since we're here and we're stuck, is there other ways we could be useful with this time? I know I have some things coming forward that at least I could. I don't know. I'm just asking whether there's a way, since we are so far ahead.
I don't think so, just because the public hasn't been made aware that we're going to talk about anything on the budget amendments.
If there's any way we could effectively use this time, then we.
It's only 3 minutes.
Well, no, we're way ahead. I mean, that's not just for a legislator, you should tell, but what we're going to be doing for an hour and a half.
I imagine going out to eat before the meeting.
Yeah,
I'm...
Good answer.
Okay, so we'll take a 5 minute... let's take a 5 minute recess, and we'll come back.
Six?
All
right, fair enough. I feel like that's lower than usual.
It really was.